Good evening. Nice to see you. Feeling well? Good. Yeah, you were missed. So we are about halfway through this semi-Zen-like material, and we've come to the end of the third point. And each point, you may remember, is a paramita. So, and there are six paramitas, so they go one by one from generosity to now the third point, which is the paramita of patience. So, and patience in terms of the Lojong means to accept what comes before us. Among many other things, but mainly that is the essence of this number three point. Accumulating merit, laying down evil deeds, offering, making offerings, relating to the sacred, transforming bad circumstances into the path of enlightenment. So it's not that we transform ourselves so much as we meet whatever circumstances and transform them. It's about our thoughts. Every occasion, every occurrence is a thought in us. So it's up to us to receive what comes in us or before us, or none of those words is really accurate to the experience of how we encounter moment by moment our life. And it ends up by suggesting that whatever we meet, especially the unexpected, the things that really shake us up, that we join those occasions with sitting practice. Join it with meditation. So we get bad news, and we can say, oh, why is this happening? This is terrible. I'm going to... Or maintain the sitting mind. Don't project it on others. Don't project it on oneself either. But simply stay with sending and taking. Stay with compassion. I don't know if you heard this morning on my way to the doctor's office, I heard a little bit of a radio program that was discussing a discussion of office etiquette, how to deal with people in your office that are impossible to deal with, are really, really hard to deal with, all the various permutations of that. And somebody called in with a very excited offering of his experience that if you have somebody that's really difficult, you gather a little group of the people who are closest to it and sit around a table together and each one tell the story of his childhood, her life. And he said it became, everything became personal and immediately called up compassion, that the miserable boss suddenly appears to tell of his growing up with 8 other brothers and sisters in terrible poverty with 1 bathroom in the house and et cetera, et cetera. Or the only child, the horrible boss who was completely lonely because her parents really had nothing to do with her and she was the only child, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, which we know because this is how it works, suddenly all that projection disappears when you take in the truth of somebody's suffering. It had nothing to do with Buddhism or Lojong or any of those things, but of course that's exactly, it's what happens, it's how it happens. We have to be willing to know, of course, be willing to take it in. So point 4 comes next. Showing the utilization of practice in our whole life. How we can use practice in every moment, in everything that happens to us. So, there are 5 strengths, because this is about the paramita of effort, which comes after the paramita of patience. Patience and effort. So, how we use practice on our whole life. And of course that was our sort of our homework for the week, was how we could apply this dipping into zazen rather than projecting. So before going into point 4, I thought we should talk about it a bit and see what that was like when you had a chance to project and did not, and stayed in place, which is really what this is. How we can keep our balance, keep our practice. Jeffrey?
Well, I'd like to give you 2 experiences that I had yesterday. I began my day and ended my day. it began with, after I had my half-hour walk in the morning, I had a message on my machine that said that an IRS crime theft agent wanted to talk to me in the most threatening voice you can imagine. At my age, I had never received a phone call from the IRS, so it's what we call unexpected, right out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see my mind proliferating like an atomic bomb, about ready. It just, I just, all of these scenarios, and I went, poof, I just stopped it. And my wife was out of the shower about that time, and said, Gloria, I just got the most unusual phone call. We discussed it with her. We kind of talked about it. And what began to kind of come up with was this might be a scam. The whole thing is my age, because I'm starting to hit that age where scam artists begin to find, oh, here's somebody. Retirement age. So anyway, long story short, this agent phoned again about 12:30, and my wife picked up the phone, asked, was very polite to him, and said, we would like you to send a form, email, or a letter with the letterhead of the IRS regarding this account. Always in just like that. So it was a scam. And that's how the day started with that. And this could just get really crazy.
Yeah.
Wondering, why does the IRS crime theft? Last night, around 9:45, my wife and I are in different rooms, and my stepdaughter hears some loud sounds coming from next door. We can't hear anything. Not with these old ears. But she's got, you know, she's got the ears of a canine. She can hear anything. So she comes into the room, tells us something's going on next door. So alerting us, we went to the driveway. And we could hear my next door neighbor, Karen, screaming, Bob, no, no. And immediately my wife thought that my neighbor was abusing his wife. And she called 911. We had three police cars at our door. And we went next door and had a conversation with our good friends, the Johnsons. And it came to find out that they have about a 30-year-old autistic son, and he had been throwing things because he's very upset. The family had a discussion about their dog, and one of the family members thought that they should put the dog down because it is blind and is now crippled. And another family member advocating the opposite. The autistic boy became very agitated by all of this and was throwing things around the house and making loud noises. And they were restraining him. And this is why my neighbor was screaming. Well, she didn't realize she was being so loud. And anyway, my wife and her had a big talk today. But both of the occasions were about projections about what we think might be happening. In the case of the IRS thing, that there was some sort of serious issue, which there wasn't, it was a scam artist. The other one was that a neighbor was abusing, you know, a friend, a fellow human, and it was absolutely didn't have anything like that. So, perception is so critical. We, you know, know, we can attach to a perception so quickly. Just our compass can just spin right that quickly, and we move in a real interesting direction, say the least. Kind of tear ourselves up in the process. I wanted to share those two because they dealt very much with perception, how the world sometimes really truly is dreamy and illusory. And I thought, wow, if that happened at the beginning of my day and the end of my day. And I don't think that's too uncommon for people to have experiences. I just said they were new for me. I've never called the police, nor have I ever, you know, had a reason to find myself the victim of IRS crime. But yesterday I did, all within the span of about 12 hours. So my story.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Rodney.
Finally managed to bring the cards that I've been using, the logo cards. I don't know if you've talked about them in the way. Every prayer we did, every point on the page, and that the practice is that you shuffle them up to just a bit one per day. But I'm amazed, and I've had these for some time, but I didn't start using them until last month. And I'm amazed at how gentle it is, how terribly gentle it is, that you read that line. You see, sometimes you say, water, sometimes, I wonder what that possibly means. The page, if you miss something, you can go to the beginning of the section, and the essay of it. But my point is that there's just enough action, just enough intention first to pull the card out, and just enough action to read it. Just this little bit, and it's just like an odor, it spreads. Recognizing past or events that it's referencing, oh yeah, it's making that a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a solution to that, right? But the whole thing was, you know, in our society, everything has to be big, huge. Not this from the walking the physical world. And this is more than anything that I've come across, meditation, jobs, whatever, that it engages.
Yeah.
It engages the whole of me, and I'm wrapped around a feeling. Not so much an idea, but a feeling. And it's just like,
yes.
I have, if anybody wants to get into the email list we have here, they're paying $20 for questions, and it takes 5 days to go.
Who sells them?
It's one of the
Shambhala, or one of those?
Yeah, it's one of those. It's not Shambhala, actually. It's one of the companies making his documents and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But they're referenced. You know, it's recognized. The whole idea of just shuffling is not coming today.
What is today?
Because we have that thing, but we have to start at the beginning and go through it. And
Well, that's what we're doing now. Well, that's a wonderful idea. We could all do that once we've done this. Yeah. No. No, don't make me do this. Thank you. I wonder if it says in the back of here. Nope, empty pages. Look for that. Don?
A couple of thoughts. One, thank you, Wendy, for sending an email during the week to let us know what the homework assignment was. Interestingly, I had just read this section like the night before or so when she sent it. As I was reading through it, I was having some difficulty, as I had throughout this book, and even in the previous one that I read of Norman Fisher's, which was sort of intellectually getting and understanding the idea behind these, but actually practicing moment by moment, just like the mindfulness of, you know, tasting the tangerine or cutting the carrots. Mm-hmm. Might work for the first few slices, but after that, the mind is off. Now, damn that guy. It just is the way things are. So, meeting things that are unexpected, good and bad, okay, I get that. My father fell and broke his neck. That was very unexpected.
Wow.
And so that came to mind immediately. And of course, there's a panic side, and what am I going to do, and how is he, and all these other things. But I immediately thought of this, and it came to me. But I said, well, what it's really saying is, you know, bringing these situations and unexpected things into your meditation. And I thought, but I can't go sit down and meditate. I have to go to work and I have to wash the dishes and fold these clothes and pay the bills and do all that. I can't. I'm sad already. It's over. So, you said something a minute ago, which was the meditation mind or your practice mind. And that was very helpful because that was kind of how I interpreted really what this had to be, is that for me, the meditation is wonderful, but it's, you know, 30 minutes a day typically, unless I can do it more. And then I'm off and about, and it's in and out of the world. And at good times, I'm calm and compassionate to other people that I meet and think well of all things. And then there are other times when I have difficulty reacting appropriately and staying sort of on the true path. But I did notice when I read it again this afternoon that the last two words he used in this section were, I believe, patience and non-aggression. And to me, that was a wonderful sort of hit with a stick in the side of the head, because those are the things that I really need to stay with more often, is patience and not getting wound up and, you know, wanting to explode about things. So it's wonderful practice to have the understanding instead of so much the thought to bring these things into our way and sort of try and mold that into how we care about things and things, as Jeffrey said in his example. But I appreciate your pointing out that it's the meditation mind, because you can't take a car accident or somebody putting a gun to your head and then go sit down in his laws and make it all sort of okay and just bring it in. Just to me, that doesn't work. So
so is your dad in the hospital?
He was overnight. He, you know, he fell and hit his head. That was the call at midnight. You know, this has happened 5 or 6 times. And so, okay. They called me in the morning and said, oh, he's back here at the terraces now. But he's got a broken neck. What?
Oh, gosh.
But he's not paralyzed. He's not dead. So we'll find out tomorrow when we go to the spine surgical clinic. Kaiser to find out what's really wrong. He just had a brace on him. That's one of those sort of ascending and receiving is working for me in his case and many others to try and pull in, boy, am I lucky, look at what these poor people are suffering with, what can I do to relieve their difficulties? Because it's very easy to get caught up in self, my poor me.
Yes.
When something like that happens, it makes it very easy to realize, boy, do I have it good.
Yeah.
So, but he's fine. Thank you. For he will.
I'd love to talk about patience just for a moment. I'm celebrating my 19th anniversary today. What a beautiful day. And my wife and I exchanged cards. And on my card, I spoke a lot about patience and about how marriages are really, it's a lot of work. And I've been so blessed to have a partner who puts up with me. He deals with my particular issues. And so we're really enjoying this time. We put in a lot of hard work and a lot of it's starting to pay off. There's still I think it was Len Jensen that talked about apartments. He's still in meditation, visits apartments in his mind. I love that expression. They're very dark apartments. You know? And they're the things that maybe we're ashamed of, the things that we, those apartments, they come up in meditation. Sometimes they find expression in our life, in our daily life. So, anyway, it's a long way just to describe. I'm very grateful for this opportunity to have a spiritual practice. I look around and I see a lot of people in the world who don't seem to be interested in a practice. And I feel saddened for them and sorry that they don't seem to find room or time for it. I'm so grateful that I have the time for it. I'm supported by a wife who's very excited that I've run off to meditation on our anniversary day. So, thank you.
Well, thank her for us, for sharing you with us. Congratulations. It's an accomplishment. Well, point 4 is next week's homework, and it's using practice in our whole life, effort, exertion. And there are just 2 slogans for this one. Number 17, which is 5 strengths, so it's not so small. And number 18, which is about our death. Facing our death, honestly. And benefiting, the benefits of facing our death rather than turning away. And the 5 strengths are determination to maintain this mind of sitting, of bodhicitta, getting familiar with this mind, really making a study of it, practicing what he calls a seed of virtue, which is about body, speech, and mind, all three dedicated to bodhicitta practice, and aspiration to be done with self-grasping, to make that our aspiration if we want to wish for something. Wish we can wish for not being hung up on ourselves in the way that creates a lot of unhappiness and confusion in our life. Reproaching the ego is number four. He says, get rid of it. Every time it comes up, get rid of it. And aspiration is getting rid of the self-grasping. Pray to never be separated from the two bodhicittas, the relative and the absolute. Rely on dharma, not people. Rely on meaning, not words. Rely on definitive meaning, not provisional meaning. Rely on intuitive wisdom, and not conventional wisdom. And then the last one is our death. So it's number 17 and number 18. So all of it is just increasing in detail the self-knowledge and self-discipline of being willing to see things as they are, not as we wish them to be. So are there questions? Well, next week we will also begin our practice period that will begin on Tuesday night and end at the end of Sesshin. So that's 6 weeks of, and it's wonderful that we're doing this because this is all about a practice period in the kind of way that if we take it seriously and give it enough time, can be a lifelong practice. But practice period kind of ups the ante of our practice so that we find maybe more time to sit, find something that we would like to study, something we'd like to memorize, something that will in some way increase our awareness of our life of practice and give it some juice, some extra juice, some extra insight. So we'll talk about it next week, but I wanted us all to be aware that it's coming up. And you can be thinking about what you might be wanting to do for that. It won't be so formal as most places. I won't check you once a week to make sure you're doing what you say you're going to do. I think you have to check yourself. But I hope that we can share what we're doing through those 6 weeks and make that part of our discussion so that, that we can enhance each other's aspirations, you could say, and help each other with our practice. Wendy?
Is service a suitable on-home practice? Service to the Sangha?
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. We have a Shuso, but unfortunately she lives in Ontario, Canada, so our Shuso won't be able to do that. That's her job, really, is to be of service to the Sangha, and have little teas with people and discuss the Dharma with people and etc. But she's so far away that we won't see her until Sesshin. And then in Sesshin, she'll make up for it in the ways that she can up until she answers our questions. If she can.